show with Anna DeBlatt to suffer another day of broadcast insolence.
Congrats to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle on the birth of their baby. Go Cats. Let's not forget she's a Northwestern grad.
You know my favorite part of this? My favorite part of this has been the debate about what the baby's name should be. And this just tells you how racist the world is. Not just America and England, but the world.
What are you hearing?
Because there are people who are saying, well, the baby's name should be DeMarcus. Or because like she's you know, partially African-American. And what's interesting about it is that there's a lot of African-Americans, right, who are like, hey, she should represent. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what's going to happen with the queen.
These things are fairly planned out and traditional.
Yeah.
You usually have about 17 names, so there could be a DeMarcus in there, but I'm going to bet number one, two, and three are royal names throughout the generations.
I'm going to guess, yeah.
First mixed race baby in modern history of the British royal family.
The Key and Peele bit. Aaron, Balake.
Aaron.
It's like, everyone calm down.
Smoochie. We can name the, and we shall name the baby Smoochie. Ladies and gentlemen, the seventh heir to the throne, Smoochie Windsor Wales.
But just a millennial name. Wouldn't that be fun?
Aiden.
Caleb.
Yeah, little Prince Caleb.
Well, Caleb is
Lord
kind of.
Caleb.
Actually, Caleb is. That's kind of an old British name.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's always Liam these days.
Liam.
Yeah.
There you go. They're very.
Well, his uncle's Liam, right? That's a problem.
Yeah, William.
Yeah.
That is a favorite.
You know how many Johns are in my family? Doesn't matter.
John's all of a sudden an old school name. Nobody names a kid John anymore.
Is it kind of weird, though, if you name your kid after your brother, even though your brother is, you know, getting a name from a very important family, you know, lineage kind of situation? If your brother's name William, I don't know how you call your own kid William.
Well, let me just say this. They're not speaking to each other, according to all the tabloids.
Oh, right.
They moved out. They're moving to South Africa.
They're doing things very non-traditional.
Or No, they're moving to some... It wasn't South Africa. They're moving to, like, Nigeria or something. They're moving somewhere in, like, Central Africa. Mm-hmm. And it was the rumor. And again, this is the British press. The incredibly racist British press.
Yes.
You think there's anything... I mean, you think in America it's racist? Go there for an hour and see what goes on. See the kind of stuff that comes out. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah, they're basically saying that her dad is never going to meet the child, Meghan's father, you know, and all that. That storyline seems to have gotten legs.
Why?
Because she's just kind of estranged, and she hasn't liked how he's dealt with, if you believe the tabloids, that the way he's handled everything.
Yeah, well, that's true. And the dad's Jewish, right? Isn't the dad Jewish? Wait till the queen finds out about that. Maybe they haven't told her yet. Oh! You're telling me that the seventh heir to the throne is half Jewish and half black.
Yeah, a lot of firsts here. First American, right? Baby, although it would be British American.
You think that would be bad enough, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the fact that she's divorced, I mean, even that used to be a big deal.
God,
remember?
She's divorced.
Not all that long ago. It was a huge deal.
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how that works with the queen falling down, but I'm just going to go with that anyway.
Queen's mellowed in her old age.
She seems to. Hasn't
well, that's because they don't tell her anything. I think that's the most important thing.
Harry was super cute, though, coming out there looking like a proud Dada. I mean, he was just so, I mean, come on. He was like gushing, and he had 2 hours of sleep or something, but he was just very, you know, emotional. He's talking with his hands. He was like, you could tell he's like, whoa, I can't believe what I just saw in there, man.
Well, there is nothing quite like it, right? I mean, there isn't anything like it. Women, I think, because it's so exhausting, right? And it's like you have this other kind of a reaction to it. But guys, if, you know, from the perspective of a dad, you're there and you're staring and you're like, oh, my God. I kind of made that. You know, it's sort of like there's like a whole thing that happens.
There's an ownership.
Yeah, well, it's a thing. There's like all of a sudden I mean, I don't know if it's for everybody, but I certainly experience this. And I know a lot of people have. It's all of a sudden like you hold them up and then you smell their head. And then there's something that like shoots down your spine that you are forever to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a piece of that. There's just something that happens there.
Well, something certainly visceral, but you also hear that just witnessing the childbirth. And I think you saw that when Harry came out and said, I just, Meghan's incredible. I mean, this woman's incredible.
Yeah. Well, that's you do.
Because you're sort of like,
right.
Wow.
Yeah. Who needs to? Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, yeah. Guys are never. I mean, and it's bad. No matter where you are, we were asking this question on TV today. Like, where was he? Was he up front? Is he, back in the, you know, with the catcher's mitt? Where was, you know?
Was he talking, telling people what to do?
Cutting the umbilical cord? Where is, you know, what's going on there?
or her mother was there, Doria Ragland, and that had to be comforting for her. Because Harry doesn't know what he's doing.
Right. No, well, Harry was in the, what, he was in the, was he in the army or something? Yeah, but I mean, he sticks his hand in a gaping chest wound. I think he can handle this.
I guess. Still different. It was cool to see him come out, though, and just be emotional. And it didn't seem like he was, you know, reading from an official royal script. He was just kind of talking as a doting dad and gushing about his little baby.
And the queen is like, who is that on the telly?
Did we even authorize that?
That's Jules' grandson. I don't know. All of a sudden, Prince Philip sounds just like Johnny Depp, and I don't know why.
Where did Johnny Depp come from?
I don't know. But I'm going to be playing Prince Philip in a new film that's coming out. All right, we're going to check in with Ben Bradley, the WGN TV newsroom, coming up in just a second. Oh, Ben Bradley?
Yes.
Did you really do that?
In the flesh. Although I think it's a little bit of an overstatement to say I went undercover. I put a baseball hat on.
But did you have a microphone in your hand?
I did have a microphone in my hand.
That's not terribly undercover, then.
Well, in these days, you don't know.
The microphone was hidden in the suitcase, and when the guy tried to put our luggage in the trunk, that was when I said, oh, hold on, let me get something out of my suitcase. Hey, surprise, it's a microphone. You're on TV.
Oh, how'd that go?
Oh, wow. How candid camera of you. I can just imagine what the planning meeting for this thing was. All right, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep the microphone in. Where's the camera? In your baseball hat?
No, I had a photographer with me. It was kind of busy, you know, and he had a camera fully out and exposed. It was just in the hustle and bustle of an airport. These guys who are...
He had a camera like one of those that looks like a still camera, though, didn't he?
Or did he have the regular TV news camera?
That wasn't the full-size TV news camera, but you could see it if you were looking.
Was it like a... Did it look like an SLR camera? I ask you, Ben Bradley. I would like the answers. I want to know.
So it was actually a cross between that. It's actually a camera that's... It looks like more than a still camera, but not quite as big as a typical TV news camera.
Okay.
Although I think you're focused on the entirely wrong thing about this story.
I would like to represent legally these guys that you just stung, you know, sort of like, hey, I had no idea. Your Honor, this is unfair to use a Kodak kind of camera looking thing, and the next thing you know, you're thinking of video, and a news guy. I don't know.
It's in a public place, too.
No.
So
yeah, no, these
totally
guys
allowed.
Knew we were rolling, you know, especially toward the end of it when you'd walk up. One guy was like, oh, I know how this works. I'm going to be on the TV, right?
All right, hold on. Let's listen to the promo for this, because I think we're going to get the excitement of this piece right here.
Monday, drivers looking to take travelers for a ride.
Are you hustling people at the airport?
No, no.
Lone wolves operating outside the law.
These people are hostages in that car.
Ben Bradley goes undercover to try and catch them in the act.
Don't grab my microphone. Don't grab it.
WGN investigates Monday at 9.
I'm not sure what he would have done. I'm not sure why that guy's instinct was to steal my microphone. Like, was it a souvenir?
I've been in nightclubs with Ben, right? and heard him actually say those exact same words in a different context. Yeah. All right. So
what do you mean about the hostage part? That sounds like the scariest.
Well, this is the concern, right? So you've seen the signs all over the airport that say, you know, anyone who offers you a ride shouldn't be giving you one. And this is because the city licenses and background checks and inspects vehicles for you know, all the taxi cabs in the city, the rideshare guys who operate in and out of the airport. Those private companies are checking their vehicles. But then for, you know, gosh, as long as I can remember at the airports, you have this subset of guys who kind of, you know, troll through baggage claim, or they'll have their car parked up at the curb for a few minutes trying to get away with it, with the trunk opening, acting like they're loading. And they'll go, hey, taxi, you need a taxi.
Mm-hmm. You do see that.
And what we found is oftentimes, you know, they are charging rates that are nearly double, you know, what a taxi would cost you, what a licensed taxi would cost you in the city. And we have heard stories from people, you know, that oftentimes even the fare you get quoted curbside at the airport winds up getting jacked up along the way. You know, the guy will say, oh, it took me longer, or the traffic was bad, and then they'll refuse to release your luggage out of the trunk, for example, unless you pay that jacked up fare. You know, the other concern here is in a lot of situations...
Did you take any of these these rides to
not,
the end?
No, we did not
to terminal,
take them up on
to
their
termination?
Offer. No.
Yeah. That would have been a good kind of thing.
This actually happened to me. I took one of those not too long ago because I was in a rush, and the cab line was so long, and there was a guy who looked like he had a clean vehicle. He looked somewhat legit. I mean, I don't know who looks legit, but I just said, okay, can you take me downtown? And he said, yes. And he said, $65. And I thought, okay, that's a little bit higher than normal, but mm-hmm. okay. And you're right, when he pulled up, he says, no, with tolls now, it's $87.
Right.
And I thought, no, it's not $87. You don't pay $87.
So what'd you do?
Well, luckily we were at the Swiss Hotel right next door to WGN, and I went up and I just, let's ask the bellmen because they see cabs all the time, and they know what the actual rate should be. And those guys came in and they sort of helped me, like, no, dude, get out of here. That's not. Mm-hmm. So I just paid him the $65, and we were done.
Right.
But he did try to scam.
Yeah, and the other concern the city has is, you know, you don't know who you're getting in a car with, right? Because a lot of times, though they might have a livery plate, that still doesn't give them permission to, you know, handle non-prearranged rides at the airport. And, you know, you didn't know, Anna, who you were getting in a cab
no,
with.
No, you're
that,
right.
Is that somebody with a criminal record? You know, we saw, you know, a couple of these guys tried to, you know, point to their livery place and say, oh, no, that means it's legal. Another guy actually showed us a City of Chicago chauffeur's license, and it was legit. We looked it up. But even if you have a chauffeur's license, that doesn't mean you control for rides at the airports. So to your point, Anna, I mean, you have firsthand experience with this. Mm-hmm. You know, when there is no, you know, dispatch service or company, you know, backing up these guys, there is a danger that they can do just what they did to you, which is, you know, jack up your fare. And you're lucky you were going downtown. You're from Chicago. You know what it should cost. But imagine if you're getting dropped off, you know, in the suburbs someplace where no one's around. You know, you're probably going to feel pretty intimidated, perhaps threatened to pay that fare.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the end of this? Is the city going to do something about it?
Well, that's the interesting thing, right? It's so often with the city, right? You know, they can give you a statement saying, oh, we take this very seriously. Look, we put up these signs that tell people not to do it. The city has had two stings in the last year, but it hasn't stopped the practice. And, you know, we were there in within one 45-minute stretch. You know, we had four or five guys come up to us, you know, offering us rides, trying to very quickly, you know, grab our suitcase and, you know, get us in the car. One guy's trying to, you know, walk us over to the parking lot. Oh, no, I'm Uber. I'm Black Car Service. You know, so, you know, I think the city, while they talk a tough game, you know, boy, if you stop for 2 seconds out, you know, waiting to pick somebody up at the airport, those traffic aides flush you out in a hurry. But for some reason, and we don't quite know why, these guys are able to continue operating at the airports, and just about everybody's got a story about them. So it was interesting. One guy did stop and talk to us about the reasons why he's doing it, and he says the city crushed his business. You know, he said taxi medallion, you know, prices have plummeted. And they've allowed Uber and rideshare drivers into the airports.
Yeah.
And he says, what am I supposed to do? This is the only business I've ever known for 20 years.
You do hear that from the professional driver services and the people who own multiple cars and things like that.
Yeah, it sucks for them.
The business has been crushed by ride sharing.
Yep. And I don't think the quality is great. In ride share, I cannot tell you how many. You can always tell an Uber downtown because he's in the right lane trying to turn left. Because they somehow don't look at their own screen in time to know when to turn.
Or it doesn't update quick enough.
Or their GPS just can't process lower Wacker and upper Wacker.
Right.
So I've been in an Uber or a Lyft that the guy's just going around in a rectangle. Over. It's like, I do not understand.
Right. Where are you from?
Yeah,
Indianapolis.
Like, where are you from? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's exactly what it is. And you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
there ought to be some changes around here. You know, when I'm king.
When you're king.
I'm going to be the hand of the king. I've already decided that Prince DeMarcus, or whatever his name is going to be, because he's half an American, should become the next king of America. We're going to go back.
So they're going to take us over again?
Well, they don't, no. We just get our own king. He's half American. We can have an American king. We could be a, you know, a subsidiary, not even a wholly owned. Just, you know,
maybe we just pay taxes, but we don't get any of the rights.
Hey, how about we don't even pay taxes to them? Forget about it. We just have his own. You know, we're like, you know, twin powers, and so and we have him be
a
the well
thought through plan.
I want to be the hand of the king, like to like a little 8-year-old, and I want to be able to say to him, hey, listen. Here's what we're going to do. When you're 16, you can make all the decisions, but before then, I would like to tell you, and this is one of the things we're going to do about the Uber. We can get rid of it. And if we can't get rid of it, What we're going to do is make sure that the Uber drivers have to live in the city in which they're Ubering. They have to be from, you know, within 25 radial miles.
You should blindfold them, and if they can't get to City Hall blindfolded, they shouldn't be allowed to ride an Uber, or drive an Uber. Is that right. What you're saying, Ro?
And they got and they have the GPS. It should be foolproof, but they're not. They're driving around in circles. I mean, there was a guy, and they drive slow. You know, like, I don't know, this building's so big, I don't know which one's it is. You're like, shut up, goober. All right, I gotta go.
Nothing better than when our stories touch a nerve with Rob.
Oh my god!
How about it?
Good thing he's got so many nerves.
A lot of them.
Thank you.
Many.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's. I have a break here, don't I? Got to take a break. Okay. Let's take a little short little break, and then we will come back, and then Ron Majors will join us to explain what happened in the Kentucky Derby, which has everybody confounded.
They come to the final furlong. It is Country House on the outside. Maximum Security so dead game. He keeps meddling on. Maximum Security.
For the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby, the horse that crossed the line first has been disqualified. After the objection, Country House wins the Kentucky Derby.
I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, unbelievable.
It was a unique moment. We were all texting back and forth with each other right in the aftermath of this. And I didn't think there was a chance. Kim is from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
She spent a lot of time thinking about Kentucky thoughts. And you know, you've been to a billion derbies, and
it's
understand how this
Kentucky
goes.
My old Kentucky home.
Right. Please don't sing the song. And there is a sense that, you know, I did not anticipate that they were going to overturn it. However, I understand the rule and why it would be appropriate for them to do it. And that's why we're having Ron Majors on, one of the great, not only do you know him and love him,
mm-hmm.
over 30 years of service in Chicago television, 35 years, whatever it was. But he also is a highly esteemed horseman here and in Kentucky and in Florida and in New York and all the places he holds licenses, even in Canada. And the fact is that by rule, that's a justifiable call by the steward, would you say, Ron?
Absolutely, Ro. In fact, they have no choice. The rule is very clear. If a horse leaves his lane and impedes another horse, he must be disqualified. Not whether it's the jockey's fault, not whether it's the horse's fault. If it happens, it requires a disqualification. So the ruling is very clear. And the right call was made. I'm a little confused as to why it took them 22 minutes to make it. There's something that has gotten a little lost in all of this debate. Two things, really. The horse that ended up winning, the long shot, was not affected by the foul committed by the horse. Everybody thinks, well, you know, he wasn't involved at all. No, he wasn't. He was just the beneficiary of what happened out there. The other thing is, remember, there are 20 horses in this race. They are relatively packed making that final turn. When those horses make the final turn at Churchill Downs, they hit literally a wall of sound. 150,000 people screaming at the top of their lungs. And this horse either saw something in the infield to his left that caused him to shy away, or, as other jockeys have described it, he hit the wall of sound and it just startled him to the point that he moved out a couple of lanes. The other thing to remember is we were really, really lucky. If this horse had gone down when those two came together, another 10 horses could have gone down right behind him. Wow. There could have been mayhem on the racetrack. It could have been the worst accident anybody has ever seen on a racetrack. And before a worldwide audience. This was so close to being a disaster. My heart skips a beat even thinking about it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned that we've seen it. You know, we've seen it in our own, you know, just if anybody who's spent a while around a racetrack, you've seen spills. You've seen horses go down. You've seen jockeys go down. You've seen multiple horse situations. And it's startling. Yeah. It's awful. And that's exactly how it happens. They get too close. One cuts off the other one. The jock, as you saw in this case, the jock tried to pull up the horse that was being impeded. The horse did stutter step for a moment there, was able to maintain its footing, which again, in a sloppy situation like that was. I think that made it exponentially more dangerous.
And I've now seen the frame by frame of the moment that it happened, and the horse that was impeded, there is a frame where the left side of his face is literally on the rump of the horse ahead of him.
Wow.
And his legs are between, his two front legs are between the two hind legs of the horse in front of him, maximum security.
Oh my gosh.
How they did not go down is just amazing.
Okay, so Saez, the jockey on Maximum Security, when he was done, you know, the horses, they bring a horse up there with a reporter who's interviewing him as they're walking the horse back toward the winner's circle, and he talked about the race, and he seemed uncomfortable in that interview, and then when he got off and they started saying, hey, listen, there's an inquiry. And they went to ask him what he thought about that. You could tell in his answer, and you speak horse better than anybody. And it's not speaking horse, it's speaking horseman, which is like this, a whole railbird language that goes on around the racetrack. And if you're around it long enough, you could tell the guy wasn't making a commitment to complete innocence here. He was saying, well, he got a little wide. He did say it was the sound. He thinks it was the sound, the wall of sound when they make that turn, because it's a, I said this earlier today. The loudest I've been, to concerts and everything, sporting events, the loudest event I have ever been to was the Belmont where American Pharoah won.
Yeah.
It is that sound of when they make the turn, the sound from the grandstand is like if you were out there on the horse, they would feel the wind from that sound, and that freaks them out.
But is it the horse or is it the jockey? Is there a determination on that? Did the jockey have anything to do?
He says the horse did it on his own, which is probably looks
case,
like he did.
In this case, it clearly was the horse, and you could tell in the interview right after the race that Luis Saez was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He knew his horse had moved out of his lane. But when you've got a horse that's on the lead like that, your responsibility is to stay in your lane. This horse moved out three lanes, or maybe four lanes. And when you move that far, the jockey knows it has happened. He tries desperately to get the horse back under control without pulling the horse up. If you yank too hard on those reins, the horse is going to pull up and somebody behind is going to hit you.
Yeah.
So that he's in a tough spot. He knows the horse is moving. He wants to bring him back, but he has to do it in a sort of gentle way, if there is such a thing that can be done.
Well, and he did. I mean, he did everything he was supposed to do.
Absolutely.
I don't think Luis Saez was culpable in any way, but he also understood that his horse had done something that would probably get them as a team disqualified.
Yeah.
And that's when you can't tell that to the horse, because when you read the rules to the horse, they get very bored. But they don't listen. Bill Mott, who's a famous trainer, made the point that if this were a $10,000 claiming race, on some dirt track somewhere, they would have disqualified. These are the rules of racing. And then today, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It's taken on a life of its own, including the president, right? It was like this is political correctness. The best horse didn't win, and that's politically correct. No, that's the rules. The rules are what the rules are. It's not the best win. If the best wins by any means possible, that's not how horse racing is.
Here's where it gets a little confusing. This is the rule in the United States and Canada. In Europe and Japan and some other racing jurisdictions, the rule is different. The rule says if you impede another horse, you could be disqualified if, in the opinion of the stewards, that costs the other horse a chance to beat you.
Right.
Now,
it affects the outcome.
In this case, there are people arguing, saying, well, it probably didn't change the result of the race. Neither one of these horses who got interfered, we don't think, we're going to have a chance to pass this horse anyway. But, that gets into a judgment call. And in the U.S. and Canada, there is no judgment call.
Right.
It's real clear.
And we're in the United States of America.
Here's another one. He must be taken down.
Right. We're in the United States of America, at least for the moment. And I'm telling you right now that was the right call. And everybody was like, I will admit, I did have a horse in this race.
You totally did.
But.
Well said.
But it was.
You were not disappointed.
I was not disappointed. I didn't realize till 10 minutes into the inquiry that I had the race. I mean, as Ron knows, I have a tendency when betting big races like this, I have a tendency to go a little wide. In the betting. And sometimes over a 6-hour period, I'll be making some, you know, some changes on ExpressBet and sure. adding this or subtracting that or doing things. And so by the time I was done with it, I had forgotten what I had done. And so I'm looking and I'm like just trying to figure out what this is. I'm trying to think, I knew I had a trifecta with maximum security in it. And I'll look at that. And then I realized right under it, I was like, oh my God.
Ron, can I ask you if there's about Gary West, the owner of Maximum Security, his response to this whole thing? He's appealing the disqualification. I don't know what you think about that. He says that the entire racing world's looking into it. We know that. But then he went further to say Churchill Downs is a greedy organization. He's like going after them, saying they put 20 horses in this race instead of the standard 14 and that they shouldn't be doing that, and somehow indicating that that's an issue.
Let me just play. Let me just get his exact words here.
We got them.
In the Kentucky Derby, where you've got 20 horses, and you shouldn't have 20 horses in the Kentucky Derby, Churchill Downs, because they're a greedy organization, has, rather than 14 like you have in the Kentucky Oaks, the Breeders' Cup, every other race in America, just because they can make more money, they're willing to risk horses' lives and people's lives to do that. I'm not a fan of that. I think they ought to have 14 like every other race. But yes, I saw the horse move out. But every Kentucky Derby, you could set down 2 or 3 or 4 horses if you wanted to, because it's like a rodeo out there.
Thoughts?
Well, he's kind of right about that. Separate from Churchill Downs being greedy, it sounds like he has an axe to grind with Churchill Downs over maybe some other things, because the extra 6 horses from a 14-horse field to 20 doesn't make Churchill Downs a lot of money compared to the handle on the race. But what part of the issue is tradition. They've always done the Kentucky Derby this way. He is correct. It is kind of like a rodeo. Every Kentucky Derby, somebody gets a bad trip. Every Kentucky Derby, somebody gets bounced around. But that is the way it has always been. Would it be safer to have a 14-horse field rather than 20? I would agree with that. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not, because of the tradition of the race, the way it has always been run. I'm a little upset. Gary West and his wife, Mary, are great horsemen. They put a lot of money into the game. They've had wonderful horses over the years, and I'm sorry that it has come to this. But the other thing to remember about him appealing is nobody forces you to race horses. You do it voluntarily, and when you enter, you are, in effect, agreeing to abide by the rules. And one of the rules in Kentucky is the ruling of the stewards is final.
Right. And there's another problem there, too, which is what do? You can't get the money back. I've already spent it, Ron. I can't. There's no way we can get it back.
They'll be knocking on your door.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Thanks,
Ron Majors, horseman extraordinaire. Anchorman extraordinaire, but
absolutely.
Horseman extraordinaire. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right. We have a very special person in the studio with us right now. And let me just explain this. Stephen Curta is the new executive director of Illinois Joining Forces. Now, you might say to yourself, what is Illinois Joining Forces? Mm-hmm. It's probably the most important organization you have not heard of in the state of Illinois. Because if you are active duty military or veteran, there is a huge gap in services between what your government services are, maybe what the VA offers up, what some of the state organizations offer up, and you know what other things like TRICARE, which is the insurance for military folks once they're retired out. I'm going through this personally now. My dad, who's you know, 38-year veteran, 93 years old, and it is. I'm running all the paperwork. It is a labyrinth of things. And I know that I am certainly not alone. There are families throughout Illinois that are dealing with this. And what you people are doing is God's work, sir. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
So let explain a little bit, just sort of as a base here, explain what the organization is and how long it's been around.
Right. And, Ro, it sounds like you know quite a bit about some of the challenges associated with what the veterans would go through. And certainly feel for your father, and if we could be of service, definitely. Let me start with our motto, which is growth, wellness, and community. So Illinois Joining Forces, we are a statewide private and public partnership program that really promotes our efficient delivery of growth and wellness initiative for our service members, veterans, family members at a local community. And we do that through statewide. We do this by two
methods. By local communities. So you organize them through a local community. The service organizations that help them, whether it's helping them get to medical appointments or it's helping them go through the paperwork. What you'll find here, and this is the most amazing thing, and through this last year's experience with me, I have found it is amazing. First of all, I think the VA does an amazing job. The VA takes it on the chin all the time. Right, they're the whipping boy of the politicians who get mad about it and the press sometimes, but the VA's commitment that I have found generally, I mean, there's mistakes everywhere, has been excellent. But what you find too is that there are homeless veterans, tons of homeless veterans, for a myriad of reasons, whether it's substance abuse or PTSD or any of those kinds of things. And they just get all warehoused. They get dumped into a system. And then the system goes, well, they got to spit them back out at some point because VA will only hold you as long as they're making you better in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
And so it's organizations like yours that are finding other community-based places?
That's exactly it, really. So we focus on six core areas. One, financial literacy and emergency response type of funds, job training or employment, health and wellness, housing and shelter, education, and women's issues. And again, the key is when veteran comes in for help, it's seldom, it's just one thing. So what we want to do is energize that community because there are support bases in all communities. It's just a matter of identifying that. And what we learned is that just here in the state of Illinois, we have over 35,000 nonprofit organizations, and of that, over 5,000 are military or veteran-specific not-for-profit organizations. So that sea of goodwill, literally, the veteran could sometimes drown in that sea of goodwill. So that's our job. And Illinois Joining Forces, our job is to navigate those efforts before it really becomes an issue.
We talk about it all the time that veterans, by their very nature, tend to be independent, self-sustaining, proud individuals who are probably more happy and comfortable helping others than asking for help themselves. And it feels like that is an immediate issue, just reaching out to say, I need some help with something, whether that be job training or housing related or mental health or whatever. Do you find that people are doing a better job at reaching out to them and getting them to get connected with the things that are resources available?
Yeah, I think we are. And there's two issues with that. We have gotten a little bit better. And even, Ro, you mentioned about how VA has continued to improve a little bit. So we have gotten a little bit better. But we need to get better even more. Second thing that's really important, and I get that there are, again, over 5,000 veteran service organizations just like us. But the point is, our veterans are what we should look at as a strategic asset, meaning majority are very, very proud. They do very well. In fact, they're very successful, whether it be in schools, communities, businesses, and so forth.
They're highly trainable.
Yeah, they are. And really, the key leadership skill they bring into an organization, they're task-oriented, they're problem solvers, all those things that community really should look at it as strategic asset rather than, oh, they're broken, they need help. And that's where we come in. If they are bit broken or they need help, that's when we come in. But I would say those are really minority more than a majority.
It's interesting, I mentioned the VA, but the VA has two arms. There is the Veterans Health Administration, which runs the hospitals and medical stuff, then VBA, which does the benefits. And the VBA, not quite as easy to deal with as the health, right? Because what I found in facilities that are medical facilities for veterans is that there is attention to task. You get a lot of former military who are working in those facilities, and they take that duty. Would you call it that, general duty?
They do.
The duty to take care of those people almost at a different level than I think you find in most other hospitals and healthcare facilities. So that's a really proud moment. The benefit, though, the benefit side, and this is, I think, where you guys could, you know, are a lifeline to people, because the paperwork and the systems that the Veterans Benefit Administration has is just a totally different world. And veterans, and you know, not even just elderly veterans, but veterans who have other medical conditions or you know, they're down on their luck for any myriad of reasons, may not have the capability to fill out all that paperwork. They may not have access to a computer. Everything has to be done digitally here. They may not be able to prove in the millions of ways that you have to prove your identity and your service record and, you know, get your DD-214 and all the rest of those things that are critical for veterans to have. It's almost an impossible thing unless they've got help, unless they've got other hands helping them.
Right. And that's our job. Our job is to find those experts who can help you fill out those very difficult and complicated paperwork that's really necessary. So you exactly hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
That's our job, to help you navigate that through and make sure we find an expert so that they can help with
that. And
they
have these veteran service officers, right?
Right.
That work throughout the United States. And they work for organizations, private or public organizations, right?
Right. Well, state of Illinois, we're very fortunate. Number one, we have roughly about 70 to 80 veteran service officers that works for the state. But then you also have certain counties that have their own veteran service officers, as well as certain cities. And then you add in all these other veteran service organizations, American Legion, AMVET, VFW, certain organizations, they also have their veteran service officers. So we know all of them, and we certainly would be able to help directing the veteran to those experts.
Yeah. What are the biggest areas of need, and are there any new trends where veterans are seeking help or want some, you know, something, you know, some resources for them?
Yeah, and actually, we've been keeping data as well, and good news is that within last year or so, we have roughly about 600 veterans that ask for our direct help. With that, roughly about double, 1,000 or so are the cases. So when veteran comes in, it's more than just one issue. It's multiple issues. Mm-hmm. And some of the services that they're really requiring, I think I named off those six. But majority at this point for last year, we're looking at is housing and shelter, as well as financial assistance, and then, of course, employment and some legal issues. And legal issues are exactly that. How do they go about getting those legal benefits that they've earned while they were in service?
Right. And there's a lot of them. I mean, you know, that one thing in the United States is very, and state by state also, depending on, you know, the different organizations, you know, honoring the service and the sacrifice and the commitment that these men and women made. And that, I think, is great. It's getting to that, which sometimes can be the really difficult, daunting task for so many people. All right, it's Illinois Joining Forces. You're sort of the catch-all for all of this. This is where you can help guide people to where they have to be, and how do people get a hold of you?
Right. So you can either log on, illinoisjoiningforces.org, or our call center number, 877-236-7702.
Great. General, thank you very much. Thank you for your service. 30 years, sir,
thank
right?
you. Yes, I'm old.
That's in a while. Maybe not as old as I am.
Okay, Rob?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm okay.
Thank you, General.
All right, Steve Curtis, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your time. It's the Rob Cox Show with Anna DeBlanchis.
Yes.
No big deal
here
on the World Wide Web. WGNradio.com.
Happy Monday.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It's really been,
eventful weekend. Sure. Whew.
Sometimes it feels like the pressure's off when we come onto the web and I get to say almost anything, and then God knows what's going to happen next.
Sometimes things get said that really shouldn't get said.
No. And, and for those of you who decided to venture on over to the web, coming up in just a few minutes, an opportunity to rip us off for White Sox tickets. See, I'll pay you to be here. That's how I look at it.
You're not above or below that.
No.
Mm-mm.
No. Definitely not above. Every once in a while, I'm below that. That's when things really get bad. When you know, when you've gotten to a point where the thing that you're below is graft and greed and corruption. That's not good.
You don't want to be there. You really don't.
This is just inducement, I think, which I think is what they claim that horse did on Saturday. You know, in Kentucky. So what was that inducement? What was it?
I don't know. I was just happy to hear it was the horse and not the jockey. Somehow that changed things for me.
It is funny that you mention that, because that is the that's like the number one question that people always ask about horse racing.
How much is the horse? How much is the jockey?
Right. What does the horse know? And when did he know it? Sort of like, it's almost like a legal standard. And the truth is that the horses are pretty, they're pretty smart. They kind of do know what's going on.
And they want to win.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So that's in them. It's just fascinating.
And they know, I mean, they start chasing each other and racing with each other in the fields when they're little babies. Little fuzzy babies. They come out of their mother and they, you know, they get out there and they, you know, they walk around in circles with their mom. And the next thing you know, there's the other, you know, weanlings are out there. They just start chasing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes a yearling will start running and then the weanlings are running after the yearling. And then the yearlings start chasing each other. And then they run for hours and hours and hours and hours just trying to beat each other to a post. Basically, it is amazing to watch.
At what age can you start seeing some potential? I mean, other than, you know, bloodlines and things like that would lead you to believe certain horses are special, but where can you start saying, you know what, we might have something here?
Oh, easy. Early. Really early. I mean, you can, once they're born, you can see how they stand. Horsemen, much better than, this is not my end of the deal. I'm not that good.
No, but you're around it, so you know.
But I know that the guys who are like our, you know, our horse experts, the Swami, we always refer to him.
Yeah.
He can go and see a horse when it stands up, maybe the next day. And you can see, and almost anybody around horses can tell that, because it's their confirmation. It's how are they actually, what do they physically look like when they're standing there? Mm-hmm. And even as a little, you know, they just fell out of their mom. And the thing is, if they fall out of their mom and then they got to get up, they generally are born overnight and they have to be up and walking by sunrise. It's an imperative. It's a natural imperative. So they get up and they walk.
It's so fun to watch them on those little, like, wiggly legs that just don't seem to work yet, and they just seem too long for their body. It's one of the cutest things in nature to see them finally able to start walking and then running. You know, it's a beautiful thing to see. And then to think, what, 3 short years later, they're in the Derby.
Yeah.
You're 3-year-olds, right?
3-year-olds, yeah. And you know, some people go, well, you know, they're not 3 yet. Some of them are not 3.
They're
some
not.
Of them are actually not. Weren't born until after, but horses become whatever year they're going to be on January 1st. So it's like one of those deals.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they're not even 3.
Right. Some of them are, you know, just about to turn 3. Most are born in the spring.
Well, do you think this is bad for the sport when something like this happens to the Derby? Or is it good for racing to say, hey, there are rules and we will enforce them?
Well, it's good for racing. It's bad for the sport because the sport's already got trouble. You know, it's got its own set of issues because let's face it, horse racing is about gambling. I think if anybody has seen Albert Brooks movie. And you know, it's sort of like when he was in the casino and his wife has spent all the money because she didn't realize that she was like a degenerate gambler because she'd never gambled before.
Lost in America,
and she starts doing, you know, that whole thing, and and there's that great scene where he has to be explained by the casino owner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That, no, this is, you know, we're about gambling. You be the casino with heart by giving him his money back. You know, it's like that. It's that idea. So we know that it's a gambling institution, and there's a lot of different ways you can gamble now. So horse racing, which was, you know, a great way to gamble that you couldn't fix, really. Well, we thought you couldn't fix it back in the, you know, 100 years ago or 200 years ago when people, you know, something to bet on other than, you know, you could kill a guy or, you know, race a horse. And it turns out the horse racing was, you know, a little less bloody. So this was a good gambling thing. But now, There are so many other options. And the love of the sport and the people who love being around it, and it is, you know, this is, there's a century and a half of tradition in the, in horse racing. This, remember, this is the, this was the 146th running, I think it was. Fifth. 145th running.
Yeah. Gee, think about that. What a tradition.
Right? So mm-hmm.
It's interesting how one controversial moment, obviously a major moment, it sparks all these other sorts of debates around horse racing. I put on ESPN today, some guy rambling about everything that's negative about horse racing. He's talking about the health of the horses, how the Kentucky Derby, as Gary West said, is greedy and that they should trim the field from 20 and that's not safe for the horses. It's opened up, like, instead of just going from, oh, that was a great race, all of a sudden now it's like everything's on the table for horse racing all of a sudden, just a couple days later.
Right. And that's the problem, is it, because it's at that point.
And people get so angry, obviously, because right. money involved. So then people,
right?
You know, but it's like ticking off your parents when you're a kid over one minor thing. But then everything that's stacked up that you've irritated them with comes out when they yell at you.
There
right?
is a possibility that horse racing, which accounts for about 25,000 jobs in Illinois, will go away huh. in the next few years. Now, it's still always going to be in Kentucky. It's huge in Florida, huge in New York, big in California. Ohio's got a pretty significant program. Indiana's got a nice program now, actually. So, horse racing is always going to be around, I think. But, you know, they're trying to cut it down. They're trying to shut it down after what happened at Santa Anita this year. You had 23 horses break down there.
But even in Kentucky, places like Churchill Downs, some of those racetracks are betting on, you know, other gaming to
sure.
make that.
Well, they have to.
They have to.
Like in New York and in Florida, the Racino is the big thing. Canada, it's huge. I think it's always going to be, but I think you're going to have fewer horses. I think the breeding is going to change. That is an amazing thing. Once you get into the sport, there's an art to it. I mean, it's yeah. like, it is artistry. And the relationship between the jockey and the horse and the...
Oh, gosh.
That's not a horse. That's Mike Monaco. The relationship between all of these, you know, these different elements, how they come together for a race is uh-huh. really something that is just, you know, impossible to quantify. And it's, there's something about sort of a higher, I don't know, I want to say it's like a godlike higher power, but there's, you know, nature at work in a way
sure.
that you can't quantify in other ways. So
plus,
it's very, very
Gary West have said they lost the 1.76. They would have got as million as owners, but they would have lost 20 million plus in stud fees is what they really are upset about.
Yes, that is true. And that is, but they could go back and win the Preakness and the
He's not going to be in
the Belmont. Oh, that's right. He's not going to be in the Preakness. Well, that's a mistake. He could go back and win the Belmont.
All right.
Which he won't do because that horse can't go a mile and a half. All right. Let me talk to Mike Monaco right now. Michael.
How are you, Ro? Hi, Anna.
Hi, Michael.
Don't ask questions like that.
Sorry.
You're the attorney for Michael Cohen.
Yes.
Your client reported to prison today, federal
yes, he did.
Prison, but he did not go quietly, did he, Michael?
Well, he wanted to make a comment, and he did. He made a short comment, hoping that when he gets out of prison, there'll be not so much xenophobia and other problems as there are today with our present president.
He also said he has a lot more to tell and he looks forward to the day when the truth can come out. Hasn't he had some opportunities for the truth to come out?
Yeah.
He hasn't been quiet.
What's he mean by that?
That's true. I think he's talking about things that he has not yet spoken about, apparently, to the congressional folks or to the U.S. Attorney's offices from his many years of working for Mr. Trump.
Well, wait, but why hasn't he?
He's not at the time. For one thing, he's been going through all of the documents that were just sent to us about a month ago, and he has not gotten through them. And, it's, you know, he's had 10 years of information from Mr. Trump, and he is, you know, he's got, and he would like to tell more, and it's just a question of timing, and the fact that he had to go away today is unfortunate, but that's what happened.
Does he get to keep banker's boxes in his cell or in his cubby?
That's a very good question. They may send him things. I assume they're going to send him things because that's part of the problem, that he will not have access to them, at least immediately, at Otisville.
So he gets 3 years. Will he have to serve all of that?
Well, you're supposed to serve 85% in the federal court system, and also you get 15% off the top, and then you get maybe 2 to 6 months off for
like a spring sale.
Buy one, get one.
Right, 15% off the test. You know, buy one, get one is what used to get in Illinois.
You went to jail today.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, obviously, you're taking it very, very sensitively.
Well, he's got it. Let me tell you something about you. Let me tell you something about your client. Your client is going to prison, federal prison, because he did things that he shouldn't have done, right? I mean, he admitted to it. That seems to be the case. He also says that had he never gotten into business with Donald Trump, he would have never gotten in any kind of trouble. He wouldn't have acted like the jag that he acted like for as long as he did, by threatening people and all the cajoling. That's not why he's going to jail, by the way, for any of that.
No, for jaggery, no.
No, but the jaggery, the general jaggery that he now takes full credit for, he says came right out of Donald Trump's orbit.
And don't underestimate the influence that had on the folks who prosecuted him in New York. Because I don't think he was not well liked by them from the get go.
Right, right. I think that's probably right, because they had related experience with him, right? Going
well, they had no experience. They just viewed him as the public viewed him, somebody who acted on behalf of Mr. Trump in a bullish way, sort of, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The prison he's going to, he's going to be with the Fire Festival founder guy, you know, the Billy McFarlane, and the Situation, the Jersey Shore guy.
Oh, he just
Mike Sorrentino.
You just say he was flexing over the weekend with his girlfriend.
I saw that.
Yeah.
So do they get to intermingle, or is Michael Cohen going to be in some sort of special area where he's like...
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think this is one of those prisons where you don't want to get thrown out. And you'll get thrown out if you start a fight or do something that you shouldn't be doing. So I think people are normally, like in most camps, people tend to act civilly to each other.
Because they don't want to go to the big house.
And sometimes they don't want to go to the big house.
The camp is across the street from the big house.
So they get a little look at it?
Yeah, and they get to look at that every day.
Yeah, it's that way in Terre Haute, for example. Mm-hmm. Someplace it's like that, yeah.
Yeah, not where this guy's going, though. I don't think there's a big house across.
I don't think there is.
There's a golf course across the street. But
I don't think you'll have access to that.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right, so can I ask you another question?
Yes.
The president today retweeted a tweet that said that he deserves two more years because the government, the Mueller investigation...
Investigations, they stole two of his years.
Mm-hmm.
It was stolen from him.
Right. So he gets two more years. Does he get a do-over? Does he get two more years?
I don't think so. Well, you know, my client from told Congress that he's concerned about whether, if President Trump loses the next election, whether there will be a calm transition.
Right, because he'll claim it was stolen from him anyway. He claims, when he won the election, he said it was stolen from him. So imagine when he loses it, what he's going to say.
Well, I mean, now we know from the Mueller report that the Russians did act aggressively to help President Trump win the election, and we know that the campaign manager and several other folks over there knew that. So it's hard to imagine that he cannot be deemed to have been assisted by the Russians, when it seems, for all the evidence is that he was assisted by the Russians.
Yeah,
but he didn't.
And then he talked to Putin for an hour and a half on Sunday, which is ironic. He talked to Putin about Mueller, but won't talk to Mueller about Putin.
Hmm, that's an irony.
Yeah,
yeah.
That doesn't make me feel better.
I know. It's funny. That's America.
I think your client is right, though. He's not going to go quietly.
Right.
I don't think he is.
Well, I can't. Who knows? Just the president seems to be so run by whim and so controlled by his own
emotional
distance of that day. It's like you don't know where he's going to be.
Yeah.
Well, God bless us. We're here. Thank God you and Anna are there, Ro, to help us through this.
Thank you, Michael.
All right.
Thanks.
God bless you.
Thanks,
God bless
Mike.
You. Michael.
Bye-bye.
Michael.
Take care.
For Michael Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, caller number 10 at 312-981-7200. Caller number 10, 312-981-7200. Rips us off for a pair. No, wait, hold on. Family four-pack of tickets to see the Sox take on the Royals Monday, May 27th. Get tickets at whitesox.com or call 866-SOX-GAME.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Not you. You can't win.
No, I can't.
for them. Other people.
That's right. There you go. 312-981-7200. Caller number 10. All right.
Awesome.
Can we talk about Game of Thrones here for just a moment? Since we're
Lauren, on this, on we need it, you.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure we can always talk about Game of Thrones until you get all the angry people who are like, I don't watch it, Kevin.
I don't watch it.
Do you still not watch it, even though we're trying to get you to watch it? Watch it.
What am I supposed to catch up on 8 seasons? I mean,
yeah,
I don't have time for this.
You know, there is one
it's
of
a poor excuse.
I think HBO put
it's
up
a poor
this
excuse.
Yeah,
what would be a good excuse?
People catch up.
You can't catch up to Game of Thrones at this point.
You just got
to
watch an episode every day. That's all I got to do.
Seems like a lot. I'm busy.
Well, there's also HBO put out this like primer that you can
get yourself up to speed kind of yeah. thing.
I think really I am up to speed considering how much you guys talk about it. I haven't really missed much over the past couple weeks.
I mean, we're not going to full spoiler alert this, this mother. But I do. But I want to go back to the idea of the coffee cup on the set.
Yeah.
Because I am deeply troubled by the notion of this and do not believe for a second that that happened accidentally. I just can't imagine how they're all standing around and they're shooting a scene and there's a coffee cup. If I had a Starbucks cup on the set of Windy City Live,
mm-hmm.
they'd pull it off.
Sure. Right.
Right.
They'd give you the mug that says Windy City Live and they'd pour your drink in there.
Right.
They're very thorough there.
Yes. There. Are you telling me that these people are not thorough?
They said total mistake. The official Game of Thrones Twitter handle for HBO says the latte that appeared in the episode was a mistake. Daenerys had ordered an herbal tea.
mother of dragons and drinker of herbal tea. First of her name. Queen of the Andals.
Mother of dragon.
Sniff.
Oh, spoiler.
Oh,
spoiler. Okay,
all right.
That was a really difficult part for me.
There's a dead dragon. Fine. Now there's two dead dragons. There's one dragon left. And somehow Lauren was trying to explain to me last week how I should know the difference between the two then surviving dragons.
Yeah. How can you tell again?
One was more of a greenish tint, which you should have definitely noticed yesterday. And the other one's reddish.
So which one lived? The reddish one,
reddish.
Right? Yeah.
Which one was good? Which one was bad?
No, they're all good.
Oh, they're all good? Dragons?
Yeah, they're all
good. I always thought dragons were evil.
You know what's really funny about this, Kev? This is what you're missing on the whole Game of Thrones thing. You're going to have to rethink a lot of your misconceptions about, A, the Dothraki, the dragons, the Unsullied.
He doesn't even know what that is.
I mean, there are a lot of, you know, you can have a lot of preconceived notions
I'm
about
so
these
outdated
people.
When it comes to wizards and dragons,
right,
guys.
How
I'm really so outdated.
King's Landing is like the end, you know, it's the end all and be all of, you know, best places to live is the Miami Beach. It's like great, but it's not really that great. It's run by a jag dork, which is, you know.
Which is a felony, we learned.
Right, a jack hat, ass hat. And the North is like, oh, it's so cold. It's so cold. The North's got other people in this. And the wildings, the free folk, all of that.
Who's always panicking about winter coming?
I am, but I'm just saying.
Everyone.
I mean, I'd definitely be down in King's Landing, but that's a separate issue. I might even be on the other side. It might be where that, what's that other place where they got all these like Nubian sort of things, like ladies
Dorne,
going.
There's Carth.
Dorne, that's where they make the wine. I'd be there.
Yeah?
I'd be there.
With a big wine goblet in your
hand?
Right,
with a latte in it.
Latte in it.
Yeah, where's the Starbucks located in the Kingdom Worlds or whatever you call it?
Well, this would have been in Winterfell, where they currently were.
Classic Winterfell.
Well, I like how people are using that moment with the coffee cup and saying that this is like the moment of decline for the. It's just like indicative of the decline of Game of Thrones. These episodes are so amazing. Like, oh, they're just not paying attention to the details. People are upset because it isn't as ruthless as it was, or maybe there's not as much sex as there was in the beginning.
Well, they're killing fewer people.
They're killing fewer people.
Well, I mean, they killed a bunch of people last week.
Well, yeah.
But what they're doing is they're saving your main characters to the very end, which is a good move.
It's a good move.
Is Jon Snow still alive?
He's still alive. Yeah,
he's the important one, right?
Yeah, well, he and Daenerys are important.
Are they dating?
Yes.
It's complicated.
Well, kind of, it's complicated.
It's complicated.
Classic complicated relationship.
It is complicated. Yeah.
It's about to get worse too.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
You can just feel it.
Was the dragon their pet? Were they upset about it? How did that play into it?
Pet. Oh gosh.
She's the mother.
Kevin,
she's the
dragons
mother of dragons.
Oh, so she's able to birth dragons?
No, they came out of an egg. But
where did the egg come from?
Now, where did the egg come from? Because I can't remember
now.
It was a wedding gift.
But who got the initial egg?
She got... Oh, listen. Kev, pay attention.
I'm trying. All right.
Okay. So here's the deal. So she gets. So she's a Targaryen. She's very, you know, well bred. She's important. You know, kind of. You know, she's related.
She's a thoroughbred.
Related to the Mad King. Super hot. She had a brother who looked just like her, which is, I mean, the daughter of that Mad King. Thank you. This is Lauren's moment where she's like, she's constantly bringing me up on this. Anyway.
Throwing in facts for you.
Thank you. And then you know, she had a brother. Brother was kind of a jag. There were a lot of things going on. Yeah. Then, you know, one's dead, the other one's alive. Whatever. So so she ends up getting, taken in a raid, right?
Did Liam Neeson show up after she got taken?
The brother, the surviving brother, like, sells her off to the Dothraki because he needs an army.
Not the Dothraki.
Yeah, not the Dothraki. Let me tell you about the Dothraki.
Yeah.
They sound scary.
Let me tell you who they are. They're Aquaman. That's who they are.
Jason Momoa.
Right.
I miss him.
Yeah, he was the Khal, which is the king. And she was the Khaleesi. He sold her off to get married and God knows what else by her. And she was like this little girl. And she's like, it looked like it was going to be really bad for her. But it turned out, because, he's this gigantic, he looks like Aquaman. So he's like, you're like, something bad's going to happen here. And they all seem like, brutish, awful, rapey kind of guys. Mm-hmm. And it turns out.
Well, they do raid and rape villages.
Yes, they do. They are rapey. I'm not going to take that away from them. But she ended up falling in love. They ended up falling in love. The Khal and the Khaleesi. And it was lovely.
Oh, that clears it up. Now I'm up to date. I could watch.
No, it was nice. It was a nice relationship.
It was.
And then
kind of liked them as a couple for a while.
Right. And then she sort of softened him a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, he was only beheading 6 or 7 people a day.
And she became very strong during that time too.
Yeah.
Very strong character, and to this day, she is one of the strongest. Yeah. So Cersei wasn't ruthless enough, though. That's the problem, I think. She
at the end of this one?
Yeah, she. I mean,
really?
Yes. Didn't you think
she should have killed the imp?
Yeah, I mean, didn't you think she was going to kill
the father? Dragon?
Oh, the bad guy who looks like he's literally looks like a nightclub guy.
Euron Greyjoy.
You're in Greyjoy, and I swear to God, this guy looks like he's just stepped out of Concrete Cowboy.
He's
exactly what he looks like.
Big bottle blonde guy.
Yeah, like bottle blonde. Right.
Yeah,
guy.
Like he's going to Bottle Blonde now.
Right. He's going from Concrete Cowboy to Bottle Blonde because he wants to. You know, he wants to crush something late at night. Is that kind of what he's saying?
Right.
And he's got his shirt is unbuttoned to like almost his belly button, and he's got that look on. He's got a Jake Cutler kind of look on his face, like. I don't care about anything really.
You just know he's bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news.
Yeah, that guy. That's
that
who
one.
Did it. Yeah.
Don't like him.
He had a boat and he had a spear or something that came out of a gun. I don't know. Was it
scorpions?
Crazy.
They're giant crossbows, basically.
Yeah.
Dang.
Oh, look at this.
I'll get around to it one of these days.
Do you read the books?
Me?
Yeah.
I started, and for the first time in my life, I stopped reading a book series because the TV show was so good. I didn't want to know what was going to happen. I wanted to see it in TV.
Did you guys see that they're going to have 3 spinoffs of this show?
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I knew about at least one, but 3, wow.
Mm-hmm. So you guys can continue to talk about it.
30-minute sitcom, The Tarleys. I think it was... actually, if you watch the Saturday Night Live, just Google that. It's on YouTube, the Saturday Night Live version of the spinoffs of Game of Thrones. Very funny bit. But... I just think that what we saw last night was great, and
it was anybody it was amazing.
Anybody who says that Game of Thrones sucks now is an a-hole.
Just keep that in mind,
yeah,
because it'll help identify those people,
right? If you have said, Game of Thrones just isn't as good as it used to be, go
get out,
blank yourself.
It's so good, it is. I think I was telling Ro earlier. I haven't cried as hard for any other character as I did for the dragon.
I'm like that too. I was losing my mind with that dragon scene.
See, Kev, it's a dragon.
If I remember crying for a dragon, you guys need
you
to.
You would too.
The green one or the red one?
You guys cried during A Star Is Born.
Oh my God!
The two of you.
Well, Jackson Maine kills himself in his garage.
It's a little more realistic than a dragon dying from a crossbow with scorpions or whatever Lauren just said.
And his dog.
With scorpions.
His dog. That's true. I'm Team Kevin here. His dog was, he locked the dog out of the garage.
So it was about a dog.
Right. And the dog is wandering around like, hey, where's Dad?
Oh no.
Where's Dad?
See? Yeah,
oh
but this
God,
is like the dog
sound?
Guy.
It's a little bit
sound.
More believable, the rise and fall of a celebrity musician, than a dragon getting slayed It's this goofball HBO show.
Why does that smell? What does that smell?
You're crying about the dog? Was that the part you were crying about?
Yeah, the dog misses his owner.
And then you knew that Lady Gaga was going to come back.
Oh, God.
And be like, oh, God, now what? And then, you know, they had a fight and the whole thing. And then she was like...
he called her ugly. He probably regrets it.
Right. And she was in the bathtub and it was weird.
He pees his pants on the stage and embarrasses her.
Yeah, there was trouble.
There was trouble. Damn it. He had a drug problem.
Well, he would kind of come back from peeing his pants, but he had all of that.
And then that stupid concert promoter guy who just eggs him on and trolls him with the annoying accent. Is he Australian? Is he English? What is he? All he knows is he's annoying. Leave him alone. He's trying to get better. Damn it.
Right. See, now that's something also to be upset about. But I can be both. See, I'm not. I am not above being both.
Oh, man. Damn it, Jackson Maine. So now you guys cry over dragons. I cry over.
I did not cry over the dragon.
You didn't?
No.
I mean,
it's a dragon.
You have no soul. Yeah, you don't. You feel for this dragon.
All right, listen. It was a long night. I didn't get to start watching it until 10:30 last night.
Can't some wizard like resurrect the dragon from the dead or something?
Well, they one did.
A problem.
One did before.
So do it again.
Yeah, by the way, these dragons are not done. I'm going to tell you that right now.
There are no wizards bringing Jackson Maine back.
I will tell you this.
No, there are not.
Damn it. I'm going to tell you this. When urine.
Who?
Greyjoy?
What? Urine.
Euron.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, it's not the same thing.
Trust me. It is. And my guess is he also smells like pee. I would imagine that he does. He's got that look like, I don't care if I dissent in my own pants. You know, he's got that. He's just such a jack. Anyway, he said something yesterday, which was important, because Cersei says to him,
are you about to give something away?
No. I mean, it's too late now.
You.
All right. Cersei says, are you sure the dragon's dead?
Whoa.
And then he said, I saw it go into the ocean.
Oh, that means it's not dead, obviously.
Oh, you're
Why
right.
would they even bring that up if it wasn't dead?
I don't know, but did you see
There's
that
probably magical powers in the ocean you guys don't know about.
Yeah, there might be.
Well, magical powers that remove those huge whatever that they shot him with.
Oh, yeah. That's so unbelievable. Yeah, but there's a dragon just got killed.
Kevin, you didn't see it.
That's a point.
Oh, what are they? You're telling me now they can just resurrect a dragon from the dead, even though there's a dragon in the show? That's so unbelievable.
I'm afraid I got to go with Kevin again.
Come on.
With Kevin, he hasn't seen the show.
I don't know.
You just told me there's a dragon in the show.
Hey, let me tell you something. When the first dragon went down, and then you see them dragging it out with the chains out of the bottom of the frozen lake.
Little eye goes blue, and you're like, oh, okay, we get it.
Right. But you're like, hey, how did that happen? The thing was dead. It was lying in the bottom of the ocean. It was dead. Right?
Well, this one went in water, too.
Yeah. So they got. So I don't know. So the, you know.
Yeah,
the
but
point is,
I know how he came back and without giving anything away from, you know, the previous
too late.
Week.
Too late.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen last week's episode, I mean, I the stuff that's on social media, I pretty that's much true. Know everything that happened with like 10 minutes of the show being over, and I never even watched the show.
It's too late.
The person that brought them back is no longer around. So
the Night King guy, right?
Yeah, but that's okay.
Arya killed him. Everyone
but
saw.
But what about what about the God of Light or whatever that?
Yeah, the God
crap
of Light.
Is. Light. Well,
yeah.
There's people that aren't really working for him anymore.
But
what, he laid him off? Was there a budget
back.
Cut?
Jon Snow got killed and he came back? You
By Melisandre,
back.
Who is
oh my
dot,
God.
Dot, dot.
Dead.
The point is you can bring people back from the dead on this show.
Maybe
so.
There's another one. Also, we're going to need maybe Samwell Tarly can
be that surprise if a dragon gets brought back from the dead?
I got to do a top five.
Okay.
Five.
Did it seem right. Where the only person of color, woman of color on the show got killed?
Oh, God. Here we go.
Oh, my God.
Did we need to lose her? She was one of my favorites.
At the
and
bar,
the dragon.
At the bar, this is what happens.
Yeah,
right. Oh, God. You knew this was going to happen. What the?
Well, it just was, it was a bad choice. I think she should not have done that.
All right. All right, fine. Land them.
I'm going to miss her. One of my favorites.
She'll probably just
her
get brought
Brienne.
Back from the dead from another character wizard person.
All right. All right, listen. Yep, it's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. What a wild afternoon.
It has been.
It's turning into.
My favorite part was when we irritated Kevin because he doesn't watch Game of Thrones and we talked about it all the time.
See, I don't think you really irritate me. I think I irritate you guys a lot more.
That's probably true.
Oh, there's no question about that.
I don't know. I've never seen someone so sensitive about dragons aside from me being sad last night.
It's true.
Me or Anna?
I was upset about it, too.
Well, I'm not sensitive about it. I'm making fun of the fact you guys are sensitive about a dragon dying in a TV show.
I don't know. I think you got a little edgy there.
Tiger Woods, by the way, right now.
Yeah.
This is something Kevin will like. Tiger Woods is in the Rose Garden, and the president is giving him the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And
in matching outfits, I might add.
Yeah, I think he's wearing the Trump tie, and this is, actually it's not. It's actually got a little pattern to it, which the Trump ties, I don't think they do.
He's a full solid tie guy.
Yeah. But they're wearing the red tie with the blue suit.
Tiger red.
Tiger looks a little bit better. I'm not gonna lie to you, in the suit.
Don't they kind of look like they're in Ryder Cup uniforms or something?
Yeah. Or they're sitting down at some like good old boy club or something where they all have to dress the same thing.
So before we get to the top five, let's listen a little bit to Tiger and the president.
Forever change. For four straight days at the Masters tournament, Tiger stunned the world with his power, grace, and strategic brilliance. He shaped perfect 350-yard drives down Augusta's rolling fairways, went flag hunting at tucked-away pins with the heart-stopping precision like nobody's ever seen before, and he buried one clutch putt after another. On that Sunday, we saw Tiger crush the field by a record margin of 12 strokes, unheard of, with the lowest score in Masters history, 270. At 21 years old, he became the youngest Masters champion of all time and the first person of African-American or Asian heritage to win the Story Tournament or any of golf's four majors. As the New York Times headline said the next day, Woods tears up Augusta and tears down barriers. Incredible achievement. After clinching the green jacket.
And that done.
Amazing.
Wait a second.
After clinching the green jacket, Tiger marched straight to his first coach, his dad, and embraced the man who inspired his enduring love of the game. Then Tiger turned to hug his mom, the steady presence throughout his life. That's true. I've seen that. I've watched that. And the person who told him that red is his power color. Wow, that was a good move. That was fair. In the years that followed, Tiger launched one of the single most dominant runs in the history of sports. He holds the record for the lowest scoring average in PGA Tour history, 68.17 in 2000. And remember, he only plays in the hardest tournaments. That's a pretty amazing thing. I wonder what would happen if you played 35 a year.
I wonder what happened if these two played.
Let's try it, Tiger. Come on, that back is in good shape.
I think they played together, haven't they?
He played a record 142
Tiger always loses to him.
PGA events without missing a cut. That's incredible. He has a PGA Tour winning percentage of 23% of the events he played, a figure that nearly defies comprehension. Nothing like it. At the punishing 2000 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, the entire field shot over par, but Tiger finished 12 under the first time.
Doesn't that sound like
US
a books on tape?
That's
sort of what it sounds like. All right,
very detailed.
Yeah, we'll get back to this.
The only thing you don't really want to fact check, because I think he actually might get this one totally correct.
Right. Well, Tiger's standing there, and Tiger could pull a total Lauren and go, no. 68.5.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if I had that job? I'd be fired, like, quicker than anybody else there, which is amazing.
Yeah, the Trump fact checker.
Two minutes.
Sorry, Mr. President. No, I'm sorry. No, it's Constitution. It's an ah sound.
Mm-hmm. Kentucky. K.
All right. You know what I think we'll do?
What?
We'll go back. Are you going to continue to monitor in the control room for this? In case he does, he could make number one here before it's all said and done. And what I mean by that is not just the number one, but he could also make the number one in the top five. Let's see. Is he going to let Tiger speak?
I would assume so.
You know, this is the funniest thing. These mm-hmm. He reads the citation for, let's say, the Medal of Honor, right, which is for military. So he, as he's reading the Medal of Honor citation, then they let the person come up, and generally they don't want to speak, mm-hmm. and they just get, you know, the medal placed on them.
In this case, now this is the civilian version of that, if there's, you know, sort of a, such a thing, Medal of Freedom. And one would imagine that, you know, Tiger's going to say a few words.
You'd think so. Seems loose, like he's...
Don't go too long. Oh, wait a second. He's talking about Tiger's injuries now.
What is injuries?
One over par after the 12th hole, and it really looked like he had no chance. Then came some of the most riveting scenes in golf history. He eagled the 13th. Do you remember that, Tiger?
Kind of. Huh? Do you remember that, Tiger?
He's got a great memory, this guy.
This guy.
And he remembers. I can recall every shot in his career. Important.
Not the bad. We don't want to remember. We just, uh-oh, what you did there was amazing, because he chipped in for birdie on the 17th and then eagled the 18th hole. All very vivid memories for all of us. In the final round on the 72nd hole, his ball was buried in very thick rough, 101 yards from the pin, and he had to get it up and down to keep his U.S. Open hopes alive. After hitting a 60-degree wedge to within 15 feet, Tiger willed the putt in to force a playoff. That was a great playoff with Rocco. He fought through the pain and won the dramatic 19-hole playoff on Monday.
God, that was awesome.
Unfortunately, 2 days later, Tiger announced that he would be unable to compete the rest of the season due to his injuries.
He went on a broken leg, no big deal.
In the years that followed, Tiger endured knee surgery and 4 excruciating back surgeries. I know that you remember, too.
And an unfair bad wife.
But it ended up good, including a spinal fusion in 2017.
And porn stars who can't keep their mouths shut.
From number one in the world rankings to 1,199th. I don't believe that. Even if he had one leg, I don't believe that. That's got to be the best bet anybody ever made. Tiger's injuries were so profound that for 2 years he could barely swing a club. As Tiger said, there was a point in time I didn't know if I'd ever do this again, if he'd ever play again. But Tiger fought through the terrible pain, and he fought all the way back to the summit of golf. Last year, we saw a sign of what was to come when he won the Tour Championship. People forget that, but he won the Tour Championship last year. Then just weeks ago, the world turned in to the 2019 Masters, and that was something special. What happened next was one of the most incredible comebacks that golf or any sport has ever seen. On Saturday, Tiger shot 6 birdies for a score of 67, sending him into the final round tied for second place and just 2 strokes behind the leader. And they were looking, they were watching, they were saying, oh no, here we go again. In gusting winds on Sunday, still behind by 2 strokes on the 12th, Tiger called upon his wisdom and experience to play for par, while other players shot, and unfortunately, they found the water. There was a lot of water they found. He birdied the par 5 on the 15th.
Excruciatingly detailed.
To take the lead for the first time.
Sort of like when your wife found that text from that girl.
Then on the 16th,
she ruined a good golf
club. He shaped a perfect draw. And the patrons roared like they can only do, frankly, at Augusta. As the ball rolled to within feet of the hole, Tiger was back on top and won his first major in 11 years. And that was some major with record-setting television. I don't know if you know about that, Tiger. Record-setting ratings. Just as he did after sinking his final putt on the 18th hole, all the way back in 1997, he went straight to his loved ones and embraced his kids, who were too young to remember the last time he won a major. As of today, Tiger has 81 PGA Tour victories, 1 behind the all-time record. Gonna catch that soon. He's won the 2nd most major championships. He holds the record for most weeks at number 1 in the world, more than twice as long as anyone else. That's an amazing number. In addition to his incredible playing career, Tiger is a successful entrepreneur, to put it mildly, and devoted philanthropist. That's how I originally met Tiger. His TGR Foundation supports junior golf programs around the country. His learning lab has helped over 165,000 students pursue their dreams in STEM fields. Tiger, we are inspired by everything you've become and attained. The job you've done is incredible. Your spectacular achievements on the golf course, your triumph over physical adversity, and your relentless will to win, win, win. These qualities embody the American spirit of pushing boundaries, defying limits, and always striving for greatness. That's what he does. Congratulations again on your amazing comeback and your amazing life, and for giving sports fans everywhere a lifetime of memories. We can't wait to see what's next, Tiger. It's going to be good. We know that. It's going to be good because there are no winners like you. And now I'd like to ask the military aide to come forward and read the citation for Eldrick Tiger Woods Presidential Medal of Freedom. Thank you.
All right, we're going to come back here in a second. They're going to read that, which the president just already did, essentially.
Do you think he'll elaborate that much when he gives some kind of honors to some distinguished war heroes? I mean, it was very detailed. I mean, the detail he went
totally
into.
Totally interested in this.
101 yards.
Well, I mean, do it for the. He's pretty good at the Medal of Honor stuff. But when it comes to, like, he didn't want to do the Kennedy Center honors, right? Remember that?
Right.
Like, he didn't want to be involved in that. And he's having, and it's like a Pat Boone.
Yeah.
And Bill O'Reilly, and I mean, those are all the people that are getting the awards.
Do they need
now.
To call it a Medal of Freedom, though, when it's a sports star? I don't know. It just, does that work?
It is for entertainers. I mean, there are people who get the Medal of Freedom that are, you know, that's in the entertainment
Jack Nicklaus have received it. Arnold Palmer's received it.
That's because these presidents just want to meet these guys.
Right.
True.
Right? They're not asking LeBron to come up. Imagine Trump asking LeBron to come up.
Well, Obama had Jordan. I'm sure there's a little something there, being a fan.
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
Yeah, but maybe. Right.
Yeah. What is Michael Jordan
Steph Curry.
So amazing, other than be the best player ever.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's not going to have those guys come up, because that would be, you know, I don't want to meet them.
I don't want to meet you.
Tiger plays with him, so he knows that Tiger's not going to be, you know, this is just about being an FOT.
Mm-hmm.
Or FOD, I guess, in this case.
Well, they got
friend of Don.
They had some complimentary things to say about each other on Twitter. And
okay, here is here's the podium. Tiger.
Here we go. Set to say a few words from the White House Rose Garden.
Who the hell's that? Get off our radio show.
It's the golf announcer.
Tiger's now approaching the microphone.
Thank you.
It's about 6 feet from the microphone right now.
I just want to say this has been an unbelievable experience, and to have the support that I've had for all these years, and everyone here has seen and been with me for some of you for my entire life, and some of you for more than half my life. You've seen the good and the bad, the highs and the lows, and I would not be in this position without all of your help. In 97, yes, I won the Masters, and I was there too. I ended up hugging my dad and my mom. My dad's no longer here, but my mom's here. I love you, Mom. Thank you. And Sam and Charlie for all your love and support. I love you guys so much. Erica, thank you. I mean, everyone has meant... You guys have meant so much to me in my life, and I've battled. I've tried to hang in there, and I've tried to come back and play the great game of golf again. I've been lucky enough to have had the opportunity to do it again, and found a game that has allowed me to do this. And the amazing Masters experience that I just had a few weeks ago certainly is part of the highlight of what I've accomplished so far in my life on the golf course. To have had that type of experience and to be able to come out on top and win. Joey, thank you. All just the great reads, too. I just want to say thank you again. This is an honor. I know that I'm the fourth golfer to have received this award. The late Arnold Palmer, the great Jack Nicklaus, and Charlie Sifford, who is, I always called him Grandpa because he was like the grandpa I never had. And I ended up becoming so close with him. that I ended up naming my son Charlie after him. So to have been chosen as the next golfer after Charlie is truly remarkable. So thank you again, and thank you, Mr. President.
There you go.
All right.
All right. So then they
President Trump honoring Tiger Woods.
Oh, who is this guy?
Who's this guy?
No.
Who are taking the show?
White House Rose Garden, the president.
Right now, Tiger stepped away from the microphone. No, this is
sounds like George Stephanopoulos.
He's looking down the row. He does see his wife and children. Nope. Nope. I'm sorry. That's his girlfriend and children. They're now coming up to the podium.
Slight wind right to left. Him.
They are just now about to stand there. The president is there. Melania is there. Oh, there goes the president. He's putting down the microphone. And now, the pictures.
All right. All right.
It was excruciatingly detailed in his...
Yeah.
His presentation.
Well, I think he's really interested in. He couldn't tell you. He couldn't actually point out Ukraine on a map, but he could tell you exactly what happened here. Oh man! All right, let's do. You know what? We're gonna roll through this now. The top five at five. We might as well. Let's just have a little fun. We're on the way.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show. Let's go.
3, 2, 1. Now it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Off we go here, checking in at
number five.
Gary West is the owner of Maximum Security that won the Kentucky Derby but then didn't win the Kentucky Derby, and he says he's filing an appeal.
Right after the race, I had the trainer call the stewards and very nicely ask them if they would be willing to visit with us after the races were over. We said, we'll stay here till 11, 12 o'clock at night, whatever you want. And they said, absolutely not. We won't be showing the films until Thursday. So we didn't really have any alternative legally other than to the appeal has to be filed within 48 hours.
CNN reporting the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission has denied the appeal.
Right. Well, and there's for a very specific reason that when you sign, you know, it's part of your license, it's part of when you go and you get your license at Churchill Downs or at any of the tracks, mm-hmm. Keeneland, any of the tracks in Kentucky, you are obligated to obey the rules of the Kentucky Racing Commission. And the Kentucky Racing Commission clearly states that all steward decisions are final. Hmm. So you can't have nothing to do about it. And they've already, by being in the race in the first place, they agreed to that condition. So there's nothing they can really do.
So that's it.
And what are you going to do? Because they can't
what
do
are you going to do?
Here's the problem with that. As much as I think a lot of people are disappointed, and I get it. I mean, it's especially if you're... You know, the very specifics of the rules of horse racing, most people don't know. 99.99999% of people who are watching the race wouldn't know that.
I don't.
But it is the rule. And it is what happened. She had to make the call to the steward, who's the chief steward of Kentucky. You know, she stood there for 20 minutes making the decision with some of the other people, like the track steward and all the rest of the people who were there. And they look at this stuff, you know, this is what their job is. They look at it all the time. They know what the rules are. And that's what they did. And it sucks. And you know what? Even the owner of Country House said that backing into this is not the way they want to do it.
No, he feels, you know, like, feels like he needs to make an apology for winning. It just doesn't feel right.
So now the guy goes on, this guy, Gary West, he's still a little hot.
He's hot.
He's hot. So it goes on TV this morning.
I obviously saw the horse move out, but in the Kentucky Derby where you've got 20 horses, and you shouldn't have 20 horses in the Kentucky Derby, Churchill Downs, because they're a greedy organization, has, rather than 14 like you have in the Kentucky Oaks, the Breeders' Cup, every other race in America, just because they can make more money, they're willing to risk horses' lives and people's lives to do that. I'm not a fan of that. I think they ought to have 14 like every other race. But yes, I saw the horse move out. But every Kentucky Derby, you could set down two or three or four horses if you wanted to, because it's like a rodeo out there.
All right. That is, I don't disagree with them on that. I think 20 horses is too many in a field, mm-hmm. especially in a... And I get why they're doing it. They've done it like that forever, though. This is not new. They didn't just add six horses. But
right.
they are, you know, it's always sort of been done this way to give as many three-year-olds, a, you know,
a shot as they can in some way, you know, because it's helpful to all the prep races. It's a totally separate business thing. But he calls out Churchill Downs, which is one of the largest owners of tracks. They own Arlington here. That, and Dick Duchessois is the chairman of Churchill, mm-hmm. that he's calling them out for being greedy. They're in the horse racing business. But then Savannah Guthrie says,
isn't the stewards, the judge's decision essentially correct, even if you don't like it?
Well, you know, that is a way of looking at it. The thing that is kind of mystifying to me is that the stewards were either looking at a high-definition television or looking at it with binoculars. Our horse was in the lead the entire way around. They looked at exactly what the whole rest of the world looked at, and they didn't file a steward's inquiry. Mm. So I can't imagine that it was very obvious to them
at
the time either.
All right, stop. That, I got to call BS on that, too.
What part of that?
Because the foul got as soon as the race stopped. The jock filed a foul. Mm-hmm. They asked for an inquiry immediately. So with the timing of that, they would be back looking at that again before they would. Sometimes they'll do that without actually putting an inquiry up, which is there's a sign on the scoreboard says inquiry and they light that lamp that says inquiry, and they didn't do that immediately. Sometimes because they're looking and they just want to make sure before they actually do that, because they got a few minutes to look at the replay, make sure everything is okay while the horses are coming back to the, you know, to the main part of the track, because they run past and run out, gallop out. So I, you know what, all right, I get it. I'm sorry, sir. This is a tough business. It's an, you know, it's a heartbreaking business. You break your heart in a million different ways, as they say.
You break your wallet, too. But he already starts with over $1 billion, so I don't think he's hurt too much.
That's what Ron Majors told me when I got in the business with him. He said, if you want to become a horse racing millionaire, start with $1 billion.
Perfect.
Number four.
Michael Cohen reported for prison today, and he would not go exactly quietly.
When I rejoin my family and friends, that the country will be in a place without xenophobia, injustice, and lies at the helm of our country. There still remains much to be told, and I look forward to the day that I can share the truth. And thank you all very much.
Yeah, you did a nice job helping with that, Mike. Nice job. When he was going to punch reporters in the face for telling the truth about Trump during the campaign. Nice job. Did good. Well done. Thanks for your help. Now remember, you got to cut all the garlic real thin, razor blade. And keep the sausages in your pants as you're coming through security. Not that one.
Too soon.
Checking in at
number three.
Prince Harry. Who is quite hairy now?
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
He's rocking like the facial Harry. He looks good.
Right. He's got the ginger fro going, like off of his mm-hmm. face and off the top of his head and all that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a father. Proud dad, welcoming his first child with the Duchess of Cambridge, who used to be on Suits.
Thanks for the background. Also formerly at Northwestern University.
Kev.
Go kids.
There you go.
Mother and baby are doing incredibly well. It's been the most amazing experience I can ever possibly imagine. How any woman does what they do is beyond comprehension. But we're both absolutely thrilled and so grateful to all the love and support for everybody out there, from everybody out there. It's been amazing. So we just wanted to share this with everybody.
Gushing daddy.
Yeah, it's sweet. And it is true, though. I mean, if you're there for the live birth of your uh-huh. child, you know, there is a moment where you do start. You do have that that awe, that amazement of the nature of it. And you have the awe and the amazement of the strength, generally, of the mom in this case. You know,
right.
Sometimes they get knocked out or whatever. There's, you know, and you have to leave the room. You don't get to witness this. But the physical nature of it is absolutely awe-inspiring. But I will tell you something else.
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely terrifying at the same time.
You can tell both of those things in his voice.
Yes. It is. It's like you're watching and you're like, oh, no, oh, God, no, no, no. No! They're just going to get broken. No! It's like a whole thing that goes on in a guy's head.
Men could not do childbirth.
No, no.
Mm-mm.
No, no,
they
no.
Couldn't.
It is the most, and it is like, and then there is that moment where, you know, you have now,
as a guy who really, it was, that was fun, right? It was not, making the baby was not a chore, right? It was like an exciting, you know, a pretty great moment. And sometimes you could think back. I know a lot of dads, you know, try to do the math and try to figure out, you know, sort of when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
like that, where you were, if you're on vacation.
Yeah, or... and maybe, and then you're rolling back through. Because guys are pretty good about cataloging things like that. And so the...
it was a rainy night.
Yeah, I don't know where we are.
Cool fall night.
I think it was the fourth time. You know, it was like that. This or that kind of... I really didn't think I had it in me, but I could tell right there. And the thing is that you do, you stop and you're like, wow, it's like the most amazing, amazing gift that can be bestowed, right? Is like this, you know, this gift of life and, you know, there's the mom holding the baby and then it's, and all of a sudden all of that is just sort of coming to it's just, it is the definition of a romantic moment. But while it's going on with the screaming and the yelling and the things that are happening down there, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, hey, do you want to watch? And you're like, ah,
I'm not sure what.
I'll be
you
honest.
You must feel like, I don't know how I can help in a scenario like this.
No, well, they do. They call you down. It's, I mean, I don't know what it was like in your situation, but, yeah. But, and I mean, like, I'm up at the top, you know, like, you know, over there, like, holding it. And she's already very upset at this point. And then,
it's
and
painful.
They, right. And then they, you know, they called me down, you know, to the field, and I'm like, oh God, I really don't want to be a part of this. Oh no, no, this is beautiful. You'll see, oh, the baby's crowning, and you're like, oh no, 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 oh hell no,
you can't unsee
oh
it.
No.
I'm having really bad flashbacks to sex ed in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God. Well, the funny thing is too that you know, like they, you know, in the modern era, it's very confusing because the baby's got hair, right?
What do you mean the modern era? They never had hair before?
No, no. Oh, well, the baby's got hair, and like, and all of a sudden, there's like, and then all of a sudden, there's like this, it's like, it's like E.T. It's, I don't know, it's like, not E.T., it's like Alien. There's some moment happening there, you're like, oh, now just you wait a minute. Because you don't, see, now the thing is.
You don't get, yeah, you you're giving birth, you don't necessarily see that.
You don't see exactly what,
point.
Right, that, right. Yeah, you never really see that vantage
no,
point.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Unless someone videotapes it and
right.
shows it to you later.
Yeah, or, right, or you see it in court. And then that's the thing is, you're like, oh my God. And then when it happens, and then they were like, would you like to cut the umbilical cord?
And you're like, did you do that?
What am I paying you for? Which was pretty much what my thought was. And then the nurse is like, no, you got to do it. It's like a, you know, this is a great, you know, sort of tradition.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, you'll remember this for the rest of your life, which I did. And it's like cutting a telephone cord. I mean, it was like, I mean, it's like a garden hose. It really is. And like, you're cutting through it and you're like, and I'm like, oh my God, am I going to do anything? No, no, it's fine. And then like, now let's wait. Now here comes the placenta. And I'm like, ah, it's all right. I'm out.
You didn't save the placenta and eat
Call me later. I know somebody that's been done.
It's been done.
Yeah. Did they give you special scissors for this, or is this like...
Yeah, they got, yeah. It's like, honest to God, it's like pruning shears. It's like you gotta... It is not an easy item.
Wow.
Does that mess up the belly button for, like...
No, they do it. They do it. No, you cut it like in the middle, and they do something else. They work some other deal.
They do something else.
I was out. I did my job. I got out. I'm over there when they're... Yeah, when they're, like, they're weighing the baby, and they're, you know, they're doing... They're putting the, you know, the stamp on the feet and the whole thing, and I'm like, oh, I'll be over here. Oh, sir, don't you want to see the placenta? Dad, they call you Dad in the room. Dad, don't you want to see the placenta? No. And you'll be keeping this. No, I will not be keeping that.
We'll freeze it for you.
No.
Put it in a smoothie like this all the celebrities
right,
do.
Right, this is before people were eating the placenta. This is like, you know, this is like, people are like, oh, we're just throw this out, but you know, you should be here for that. And then, and she was like, I don't even come near me ever again. All right.
Baby changes everything.
It does.
Number two.
Jay Cutler has quickly turned into a bit of a reality television sensation with his appearances on Very Cavallari, says here. Now, we all know what this is. Now he has a desire to open up a butcher shop. Is that what's going on?
Yeah,
there?
That was
this is last
the subject
night?
Of the cut, right? Was it the cut?
Okay.
So you know how the other day we were talking and you were saying that you want to do something now?
Yeah.
So have you given that any more thought?
I have. I was talking to Mike about trying to open a butcher shop.
That's great. How involved do you want to be in the butcher shop? Like, are you going to be in there? Like, slicing meat for people?
No, I'm not a butcher.
Oh, right, yeah. But I'm asking how involved you want to be in your business.
I'm going to be micromanaging the shit out of you all.
Are you going to be, like, in there, like, greeting people, like, hey, welcome to Cuts?
That's what it's called? Did you just name it?
Look at that. So I own half, is that right?
We are married, so yes.
I'll trade you your half of Uncommon James for my half of Cuts.
I'll pass.
Very creative.
I can tell you this. He was not cutting the umbilical cord. He was asleep in the waiting room with his head back.
He's always asleep and disinterested in everything.
Yeah. Maybe he was even back home. You go ahead of the baby. And finally,
number one.
Adam Sandler was the host of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, cool.
The idea of it's cool. Yeah. I don't know. I just never got into Adam Sandler the same way Adam Sandler got into Adam Sandler. So I just never quite fully got him.
Oh, he's catchy with all his songs.
Yes.
I didn't love all his movies that kind of weren't great for me, but
so he did Opera Man. Remember Opera Man would come and sing sing the news. Here's his thoughts on Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, almost finito. Alto exciting, edge of my seat. We can't wait for final show, so we can cancel our HBO.
That'll happen.
And on the president?
Trumpa, dumpa, trumpa, dumpa, I make it the wall. I pay in the car, and they take it the fall. Trumpa, dumpa, trumpa, dumpa, they are afraid to impeach. I get to make the wall. Putin makes me his beach.
Shots fired.
and his thought, and just hours later on the Kentucky Derby.
Kentucky Derby, very fast, oh. One in first and one in last, oh. Winning horse is magnifico. Losing horse is delicioso.
All right.
Row 1-0. Didn't you win-o? After the Kentucky Derby-o?
I wrote 1-0, yes. Mm-hmm.
You did. A lot of cheddar-o.
Yeah, yes. It's really easy to rhyme words when everything ends with O. I get it now. I get how he does this.
Yeah, there you go. A brilliant writer here. Now, what does he do with William Barr, though?
Where did Barr go? He did not show. Check every single Wendy's.
All right. You know what? It's time to wrap this up, and then we're wrapping up the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis for another day of broadcast insolence. But you will be able to hear, because stay on the web, you're going to hear a continuation of some of the best stuff from the last week or so as well. So if we can help you get your way home, we'll see you right back here tomorrow at 3.
The top five at 5.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Hit it, sweetheart.